This is Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast episode number 180. I'm your host, Jan Urban. This episode is an interview with Ramiel Nagel, titled Back to Paleo, Curing Tooth Decay Naturally, and is being released on Sunday, October 20, 2013. This interview with Rami was recorded on Thursday, October 17, 2013. Ramiel Nagel is an internationally recognized author, writer, and speaker on the subject of health. Ramiel's background includes a bachelor's degree from the University of California. He has extensive training as an awareness facilitator and is an avid yoga practitioner. Ramiel discovered the lost cure for tooth cavities when searching for the cause and solution of his daughter's tooth decay. Ramiel is now helping create a world free from dental disease. There is a holistic alternative to the conventional dental treatments which can help you heal tooth pain, reduce tooth infections, halt tooth decay, and inhibit gum disease. Learn about a flexible Whole Foods dietary program pioneered by the head of research at the National Dental Association, Weston A. Price, that proved 90 to 95% effective in halting cavities. His book, Cure Tooth Decay, provides clear and easy to understand dental facts that you can make healthy, life-affirming choices about your dental health, including a non-surgical approach to halt baby bottle tooth decay. Learn five nutritional programs that Nagel used to cure his own cavities and halt his daughter's severe cavities. Restore dental and oral health through nutrition and lifestyle, not harmful chemical and surgery. Dr. Gallagher, the president of the Holistic Dental Association, says, quote, cure tooth decay is a treasure trove of wisdom as it takes the mystery out of dental health, end quote. And Rami's book, Cure Tooth Decay, reveals that cavities are not genetic, but a result of our environment and primarily the foods we eat. Many people can avoid and limit dental treatments while bringing more balance and health to their body. And you can find out more about Ramiel Nagel from his website, curetoothdecay.com, and more about him at the link below that, also listed for this episode at curetoothdecaypressrelease.htm. And we'll be posting his video on curing tooth decay naturally from YouTube for this episode, as well as a link to my episode number 125 with Daniela Martin on entomophagy. And donations. This episode is brought to you by Barry, Jean, John, Ryan, Lee, Brenda, Carlos, Lewis, Peter, and Tino. And while we do our best to provide just about everything here for free, your donations and website purchases are what keeps Gnostic Media going. I ask that you sign up for a membership or make a donation because we can't do it without you. And of course, we also accept Bitcoin donations up on the website. And please check out the store page where you can order the new Wheat Blows bumper stickers, bookmarks, books, the Gnostic Media Archives, the She Who Remembers Archives, a DVD, T-shirt, or you can get a membership to download the older podcasts. This show is run on donations and our website sales. This is not corporate media, but independent media in the truest sense of the words. The views expressed by the authors and guests of this unprogram are their own and are not necessarily those held by myself, the host, or Gnostic Media. Check out the website at www.gnosticmedia.com. That's G-N-O-S-T-I-C media.com. Contact me directly at contact@gnosticmedia.com. Thanks for listening and thank you for all your support. Here is my interview with Rami, Back to Paleo, Curing Tooth Decay Naturally. Enjoy. Ramiel Nagel, welcome to the Gnostic Media Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You know, it's been a interesting last few years. Originally, I had come across Sally Fallon's work over at the Weston A. Price Foundation, and I had her on the show a couple of times back in 2010, and then I interviewed Dr. William Davis from Wheat Belly a couple of years ago, and I've interviewed guys like David Asprey from Bulletproof Coffee, who is into a lot of this stuff. And number one, the feedback from the audience has all been unanimously the same. Number two, you know, for myself and everybody else, the health benefits have been huge. So, you know, when I came across your work, or when somebody sent it to me, I don't remember who it was, you know, it just made so much sense. And then when you think Weston A. Price, oh yeah, he was a dentist, and then, oh, duh, this is the whole foundation of where all of this came from. So tell me, Rami, who are you, and how did you become interested in teeth?
Who am I? I don't know if I can answer that. But how I became interested in teeth is...
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and that sort of thing. So just so audience... Sure.
Grew up in California. I have a bachelor's degree from the University of California, Santa Cruz in legal studies. I studied professional energy healing for 5 years, and my focus is on personal growth and transformation through looking at ourselves in a deep way. And I'm also a follower of Amma, the Hugging Saint. And so with the work that I do, I try to bring the spirit of service and doing good and helping people as the primary goal. And the fundamental difference between what I'm doing and the dental industry as a whole is the difference of purpose or intentionality. Whereas I'm trying to help people first, make money second or third. They try to make money and help people in the process. And unfortunately, the money and misaligned attentions causes solutions that aren't benefiting people. So I got on the path of studying dental health because my daughter had a small cavity when she was a little over the age of one, and there wasn't a remedy that was acceptable to me as a parent for a little child. And her cavities also continued to get worse. And she wasn't bottle fed. She didn't have any processed sugar. She didn't have any processed foods. Most or all of what she ate was organic. So it didn't make sense to me that she would have tooth decay, and yet she had this problem. So I went along and started researching different health things, and found that I had a kind of a skill for it. And eventually that became the book and website that I have, Cure Tooth Decay.
So how are vegetarians and vegans affected by the low-fat diet? And being into what you do, I would imagine that the majority of people that come to you are probably vegan and vegetarian, or were, and I certainly was. I was vegan for 6 years and vegetarian for about 12 total, and in my personal experience, it was the most destructive thing for my health that I ever did.
I think, you know, what you just said really sums it up. And did you have teeth problems from that?
Well, I did get teeth problems. In 2009, I went down to Peru, and I was in Mollendo on the coast and went to a dentist there. They have really good dentistry in Peru for, well, you know, let's say if you were to get $12,000, $13,000 worth of work done here, it might cost you $100 to $500 bucks down there. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the dentist, and they, you know, and I needed some old fillings redone from when I was a kid. And they were mercury fillings and this sort of stuff, and they found a couple of new ones. And then, you know, during the thing, the guy says, you know, you got to really stop eating carbos and bread and things like that. And I went, well, what, you know, bread? Well, I eat the best whole grain, you know, high protein bread out there. I know what's up with bread. And, you know, I had no clue that bread was a total poison and, you know, reacts to the body at the time. So, you know, this dentist is telling me to stop eating bread and the like, and that was when it really started clicking in my head. So then I started going out trying to find really high protein bread, right? So then it kind of went from there.
Yeah, and just for me personally, you know, I try to work with people with different diets, but I don't oppose grains. It's just that I think most people are doing it wrong. But there's a real issue about the vegan and vegetarianism. And I was a vegan and vegetarian as well, not for as long as you were, but for like maybe 2 years total. And my partner was vegetarian and or almost vegetarian before pregnancy. And that's the primary reason that I've learned now that my daughter has tooth decay, because what happens is the density of the child's teeth and bones are formed in the womb. And it's not just the mom, it's the mom and dad together. And many children are born with not ideal bone density. And if the bone density in the teeth is really low, then they'll be prone to tooth decay. And that's what happened to my daughter. So even though her diet wasn't too bad, her teeth, it's kind of like anything could make her teeth dissolve. And there's a lot of parents that I've met who have children like that. But I think the low-fat diet and the vegan or vegetarian diet even tends to be a diet based on deprivation. And people aren't giving their bodies, they're not eating as much as they need. And as a result, their bodies don't have the vitamins and minerals that they need to get healthy.
Well, you know, in what I notice in the vegans and vegetarians, and I live out here in Southern California, not far from Loma Linda, which we have the Loma Linda University Medical Center there, which is a famous school, and then Loma Linda is a town of vegetarians, and you can walk into any of the health food stores in that town, and nearly every one of the employees is actually obese. And what I see, you know, it wasn't true for my case, but I did certainly start getting larger around the middle when I was a vegetarian and eating, you know, all the processed foods and things that vegetarians eat and vegetable oils and whatnot. But, you know, what I find really interesting is that in these health food stores, they have the highest quality foods like the eggs and the grass-fed butter and the uncured bacon and all of the good stuff there. But they go over to these bins where all of the grains and things are, and they fill up on all of these wheat foods, because wheat actually reacts on the opium receptors in the brain and is addictive, you know. But do you think, you know, and have you considered that some of this was intentional? Because, you know, when we go back and we read, for instance, Plato's Republic, he discusses using vegetarianism to control the population.
There's definitely an intentional slant, but we can't blame some person who has billions of dollars and who's bored and so they want to think of destructive things to do. We can't blame them for our problems. And in countries that are passionate about food, like France, for example, you can't take away their eggs and cheese and butter and meat and pork. You can't do anything to it because the people demand it.
Sure.
And I think the main problem of the vegetarian diet, because it's not even that being vegetarian in itself could cause imbalances. It's how are you a vegetarian? Because in India, there's people who live and they're vegetarian, and they're probably a lot healthier than most people in the United States. But it's so precise and special the way they're living that you can't even replicate it in the United States, even if you eat the same food.
And they're probably not vegans. They're probably vegetarians getting lots of dairy and things like that. Would I be correct?
Correct. Their whole culture would be focused on the sacredness of the cow. And they have the zebu cows there, the buffalo, they're really water buffalo with the big horns, and they produce a very rich, nutrient-dense milk. And these cows are grazing where the people are still healthy. They're grazing on soils that have been managed for thousands of years, organically managed soils. So there's so much nutrients and minerals in everything that they eat that they can be really healthy. And there's not any junk or anything processed the wrong way. And what's happened with these modern food fads, like vegetarianism in the U.S., is that it's not a thoughtful dietary system based on hundreds or thousands of years of wisdom. It's sort of like eat food that some food manufacturing place made. Just eat their product and pray and hope that it's healthy.
Sure.
So I don't think grains or breads are inherently dangerous, and Weston Price gives us the evidence that they're not. For example, the people in the Outer Hebrides, they lived on oats as a staple, and half of their diet, half of their calories was from oats. And the people of the Swiss Alps, half of their calories was from rye bread. And they were healthy and had minimal to no tooth decay. And the problem is that we don't honor the grain as we used to, and that the grains have to be consumed in the context with other foods that they synergize with. And as a result, if the grains are prepared improperly, there's a lot of research from Edward and Mae Mallinby, who studied tooth decay, and they were really famous in England, that shows that the improperly processed and stored grains have horrible effects on our teeth and bones and bodies. So there's a lot of problems with our diet in general.
There's a book by an Italian professor, Piero Comparesi, called Bread of Dreams, and he shows how contaminated breads were actually used, with ergot and bay leaves and many other additives were used for centuries to actually control the population. But I think the issue that with the grains that Dave Asprey really touches on is this mycotoxin issue. And of course, ergot is a mushroom, a mycotoxin. But there are so many others that come up in grains, and, you know, like you said, it's partly storage and things like that, but, you know, with wheat, there are so many different types of proteins our bodies can't handle. And then you have, you know, probably 80 or 90% of the population with wheat specifically, and I'm not saying oats and other grains, but wheat specifically, that have an allergic reaction to it and don't recognize that it's the wheat. You know, meanwhile, the medical profession is saying that maybe 10% of the population has celiac disease, but it also has all of the bad cholesterol, the LDL cholesterol that takes a week for our livers to cleanse out of our body, etc. So, you know, obviously when we eat a balanced diet, we can handle these things, but our culture gets into this heavy grain and all of this stuff. And in the case of Dr. William Davis, he makes his patients sign a contract that they won't eat wheat for 3 months before their heart surgery, and then he hasn't done heart surgery for years.
It's absolutely incredible that how toxic and dangerous grains can be to people, for the reasons you said, and perhaps for other reasons, such as heavy metal reactions. You know, it's possible that digestion gets compromised from mercury poisoning and things like that from vaccines. That makes you more susceptible.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm glad you said that, because I think there's a direct correlation between celiac and between what guys like Dr. Andrew Wakefield lost his career for. You know, he's the one who
got, Andrew Wakefield. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I was thinking of Andrew Wheel.
Oh, yeah. I used to know him, too, but that's a whole other topic. he sells some of the worst dietary information I've ever come across, I think.
Unfortunately, although I think he was doing some kind of green juice thing, and I thought that was good. But some, yeah, a lot of this stuff, unfortunately, again, it goes back to intention.
Well, you know, I used to know him personally, and back in the early 90s, and he may be one of the people that actually got me to be a vegetarian originally. So, and of course, he was heavy into the LSD research and whatnot of the 60s, so no irony there.
Yeah, so sure, we could definitely look and say that the pharmaceutical companies, perhaps health insurance companies, have an agenda to promote an unhealthy diet, because the junk food companies, and that unhealthy diet is vegetables and wrongly processed grains and the avoidance of healthy animal foods. And that will make people, it's a recipe for illness. And not eating enough fat or depriving ourselves of fat, it's not a healthy long-term way to live. Although maybe for a cleanse or special reason, you might do something temporarily. But in the long term, we need
sure.
good fats, saturated fat.
You know, it's like this video, Forks Over Knives, and the China study and whatnot. You know, first what they do is they don't factor out if it's factory farm food, and we'll get into this more later, versus good, healthy, grass-fed foods and whatnot. But, you know, they sort of convolute this whole area. And if you get somebody who is heavy on, you know, processed foods and wheat and soy with all of the estrogen and stuff like that, like they show in these films, and they stop eating these toxic foods for 3 or 4 months, they're going to have a huge benefit to their health. But then what happens is after that, the liver can only produce 10% of the cholesterol, the healthy cholesterol that the body needs to keep the reproductive system and the brain functioning properly. So then after about 3 or 4 months, the brain becomes fat starved, which, you know, that should be your cue to stop being a vegetarian right then. But, you know, people like me, I'm like, no, I just got to stick through it. It felt good for the first couple of months. It's must be healthy for me, you know. So
I think it's really hard to be in the present moment and acknowledge whatever is going on in our bodies. So a lot of people do start vegetarian or veganism because they feel good, because our bodies do need to cleanse and rest sometimes. But it's important for everyone to feel relaxed enough and willing to look at what's happening, even if it means making changes.
And let's change gears here, but what are the current methods for treating tooth decay?
You mean the if you go to a dentist?
Yes, current modern methods for treating tooth decay, not what we're getting into in the show. And then let's get into the risks of those methods and the benefits as well.
So I'm laughing because I don't know what benefits are small.
Right. But well, you know, I figured you would get benefits. A kick out of that. So,
but so first of all, it's important for everyone to understand the thought behind what the dentist is doing, what the dentist is thinking and believing. They believe that you have been infected by a dangerous, poisonous, destructive entity that they call a bacteria. Specifically, they say there's toxic bacteria such as Streptococcus muti, and that those toxic bacteria have infested your mouth, and they become so infested that you can't chemically remove them. You can't brush them away. You can't mouthwash them away. You can't avoid the sugars them away. They've become entrenched in your body like a disease. And the only way to cleanse this disease is to surgically amputate a part of your tooth. And then how they perform the amputation is different depending on the quality of dentist you go to. Let's say, and every dentist is different. And the procedures that almost every dentist does, the background of their procedures is based on the use of mercury. Now, why do dentists use mercury, and why did they use it in the first place? The reason is because it was cheap, and because mercury is soft yet strong. So by having this mercury mixture, mercury fillings, you could place a filling in the tooth and get it to stay, and it would be strong. So more sophisticated dentists don't use mercury, and they might drill smaller holes. Dentists who use mercury have to drill big holes because the sort of historical use of mercury fillings requires the filling to stay, and they created a bunch of belief systems about the mercury, and the result is they make a big hole in your tooth. So you have a small hole in your tooth, which is a cavity, and the dentist will make a bigger hole in your tooth and fill it with a synthetic material. The conventional dentist will use mercury but mercury is being phased out, but it's still something like 20 or 25% of the fillings are mercury. And then if the dentist doesn't use mercury, they'll use a composite. But the composites aren't necessarily that much better than mercury in general, because they have all kinds of chemicals in it. They dry and set in certain ways that can be very irritating to the tooth. And they don't necessarily last so long. So that's kind of the tooth. That's the two main treatments. And then if there's too much damage to the tooth, the dentist is going to drill away a large portion of the tooth and install a cap on it and glue that cap on, and that's a crown. And if there's too much bacteria in the root of the tooth, the dentist will drill a big hole in the top of the tooth, amputate and kill the tooth, remove all the guts of the tooth, and put a synthetic material in the tooth, and then seal it on top with a crown or a large filling, depending on how they're doing it. And modern dentistry is based on this system of treating small holes in teeth with surgical amputation and composite fillings.
Well, that sounds perfect. So you're saying that that's not good. So what are the risks and benefits of all of this that you just mentioned?
Well, the benefit, it depends from what perspective you're looking at. So the origin of dentistry is that someone's tooth is hurting because there's a large hole in it and it needs help because the tooth couldn't help itself. So if you could patch that hole up in a way that was safe for the person and their tooth didn't hurt anymore, that would be helping people. So that's one hand. But because dentistry has become an industry where there's a lot of dentists and they're trying to make money, it no longer has become this thing of trying to patch and save the tooth when necessary. It's become this just drill all kinds of stuff and place fillings all over the place. The downsides to drilling is the high-speed drills rotate and traumatize the tooth. They also can cause micro fractures in the tooth. This is all, I'm not just making this up. There's studies that have done by dentists published in the dental journals that explain this. They drill out your good tooth structure. So your body spent years and years to make that perfect healthy tooth. And in seconds or minutes, the dentist eliminates part of that tooth. So your normal body part has been removed, and there's nothing, we don't have the technology to replace that. It's an impermanent solution, so the average filling life is 5 to 12 years, and it sets people up for the need of future dental work, in particular mercury fillings. So teeth that have had mercury fillings, because of the mercury, because there's a big hole in the tooth is structurally weak, and there's stress on different parts of the tooth, which leads the tooth to break down more. And perhaps the worst insult of modern dentistry is that people are deceived into thinking that their problem has been cured, when in reality, only a symptom has been treated and the real problem has been ignored and pushed away.
How long does your average filling last? And you just mentioned a couple of different ones, but, you know, and we should also cover gold and all of these. Is there a time when we should ever use fillings?
Yes and no, because it depends on the individual and the lifestyle they're living in. But in a ideal world, or I'll use the words of a holistic dentist. I did an interview with Mark Brenner. He wrote Whole Body Dentistry, and he said on the interview that he wishes, I can't remember exactly, but it was something like he wishes he doesn't ever have to use his dental drill ever. So a holistic, minimally invasive dentist does everything in their power to never drill teeth. And I would even question the fact of using a drill at all, because I think if someone has their body chemistry in alignment, that a tooth could be treated with just a scraper tool, where they kind of clean the area with a hand, or there's also air abrasion. There's some modern technology that might be useful if applied correctly. So you want to be really careful to not harm the tooth and not take away from the tooth.
And so do all of these methods leave the tooth weaker or stronger, or you're saying that there are new ones that don't damage the tooth, or at least not near as much?
Well, it depends how damaged the tooth it is. Depends on the care the dentist is using and the tools that they use to drill away the tooth. So there's lasers and air abrasion, which will probably be much less traumatizing to the tooth. But the point is, do you need those procedures in the first place? Is that all really necessary? Why are they doing it, and what's the purpose? And there are biocompatible fillings that don't react to people's immune systems. So there is better dentistry. It does exist, and most dentists don't practice it.
You know, it's interesting. One thing that I thought was really odd when I went to the dentist down in Peru is when he drilled, he made very small holes. And I was always used to these dentists drilling these huge holes. And he was the first dentist that I ever went to where I had no pain whatsoever.
Well, I think you obviously found a good dentist. And maybe in Peru and also in some other countries, people are really good with their hands. And dentistry is really an art form. That's what I think the average person doesn't know. And you want the dentist who's the best artist with their hands. So the guy in Peru, he was an artist, and he really understood this idea of not harming the tooth. He could feel in his body that when he touches the drill to the tooth, that it hurts the body. Even if there's Novocaine, the body still feels something is not right. So, yeah, less drilling is good. But do people really need their teeth drilled? If they have a healthy diet, in most
sure.
cases, they
well,
don't.
And he is the one that emphasized getting off the wheat and the carbos.
Yeah.
You know, and no other dentist had told me you got to stop eating bread, you know.
So, yeah, but he's still thinking from the perspective that because you ate the bread, that there's carbohydrates on your teeth that are causing the decay.
Right. It was still a low-fat diet and all of these things combined, you know. I was coming out of the vegetarian diet at that time. I was eating meat maybe once or twice a week at that time, so I wasn't a hardcore vegetarian, but I was still leaning, you know, that way. So
people do the best they can with the knowledge at the time. So at the best you did at that time was going to this dentist who you know was really careful, and so. I think a lot of us have dental mistakes in our mouth from crowns and root canals. And, you know, I had 7 mercury fillings placed when I was growing up. A dentist should almost never place a filling in a growing child's mouth because they don't, the cavities are there and they're usually really tiny because the child needs more nutrients, not because there's a bacteria infection.
Yeah. All right. So what is a cavity?
That's a good question. It's some dentists, and if you ask 100 dentists what a cavity is, you might get a bunch of different answers because they've interpreted what a cavity is based on in general, not all dentists, but in general, dentists have interpreted cavities based on what's good for their business. And if the dentist was, let's say, a cranial sacral therapist or a massage therapist or a chiropractor, and they could touch people's bodies and see what their how their bodies were reacting to the treatments, they would interpret cavities differently. But a dentist will interpret any little indent or hole in the tooth, a structural deformity, they'll call it a cavity, regardless of if that structural deformity has been there the person's entire life, regardless of if it's normal, regardless of if it's there for a good reason. Maybe there needs to be a deformity in that tooth because person's head and jaw are shaped a certain way. A different perspective is cavities. The way I define a cavity is a place of demineralization. So a place in your mouth where there's less, in your teeth, where there's less minerals than needed. And there's many causes for demineralization. And one thing that I think is really amazing that most people don't know is that our teeth are actually designed to wear down. So if you look at hunter-gatherer skulls, all their teeth have wear, and some very significant, yet they don't have cavities. And as the teeth wear down, the bite changes. So what happens to a lot of people, depending on what age they are, is they're getting some natural tooth wear, and yet their diet isn't compensating for the tooth wear. So there's some natural tooth wear as their head and jaw is changing shape, and the diet doesn't rebuild the tooth fast enough, and you'll get what looks like a cavity. And then the dentist tries to fill it, and it messes up this whole wearing process to begin with.
How does it mess with the wearing process? In what way?
Well, your teeth have a certain height and shape based on how you're biting, based on the position of your cranial bones, based on the position of your neck. So if your bite, if your teeth are wearing down, it might want to wear down. It's going to be at a height. Your body had decided that the tooth should be at a certain height. And if a dentist changes that, the height or shape of the tooth, it can affect your whole head and neck. So that's why dentists who, it's hard to find a good dentist to place a crown, for example, because they don't know how to adjust the height of the crown in accordance to what's healthy for the person's bite and head. So as a result, what most dentists do is they'll make the crowns a little lower so they don't have to deal with it adjusting it if it's too tall. And that throws off the whole articulation and biting process of the mouth. So the bottom line is, to make it simple, is anytime someone comes in and does surgery, a dental treatment on your mouth, it can cause significant changes in your head and in your bite. And these are changes the dentist is completely ignorant of. So extreme care needs to be taken with everything they're doing. And they don't have the training or the knowledge to take that care. There are a few dentists that do, but most don't. And sometimes you just get lucky. That's why it's an art form. The dentists who are artists take the extra time, go to the extra classes, and are much closer to doing a dental surgical procedure that helps the person. But again, the dentists who are artists, most of them know that they want to be avoiding doing the treatment in the first place because the body is the way it is for a reason.
What about fluoride? How is fluoride used to treat cavities? And I know they also use fluoride to help teeth mineralize that didn't get enough nutrients.
So fluoride or anything in our teeth have pores in them, and anything in our mouth that we put in our mouth has the potential to absorb into the pores of our teeth. And fluoride is such a substance that it absorbs into the pores of the teeth and makes the tooth in some areas temporarily harder, but it also makes it possibly more brittle, and the hardness doesn't necessarily help in the long run. But that's the reason for the use of topical fluoride. And of course, fluoride, I think it's in the top 10 most toxic substances on our planet.
Well, isn't it the only one that can make water catch fire?
I didn't know that, but it's definitely very toxic. So there's a whole, you know, how much toxins are we being exposed to when we're painting this really toxic chemical stuff on our teeth? So there's one issue of the topical fluoride, and in some cases there's some temporary help from that. And I don't recommend it, and I wouldn't do it to myself or my family, because there are other things you could do that are much better. And then there's the whole fluoride in the water thing, which is a much bigger problem, because when it's in the water, it deteriorates your bones and organs.
Sure.
Because it's so poisonous.
And we can thank Edward Bernays and Alcoa for that one.
True, but when you go to the city hall or you talk to your friends and neighbors or the dentists, they all are going to say that fluoride is good.
Right. Edward Bernays was the founder and father of public relations and propaganda. So of course, you know, this is the effect of his very propaganda. You know, it's just like what I call an urban religion of vegetarianism.
That's right, and most of us have been raised in a system where the propaganda, as you call it, or the belief systems that certain people want us to have been implanted in the schools and in the media and the news and movies, and if people are conscious, then they're willing to let go of those belief systems. And people who are unconscious, even when they're presented with facts or 5,000 pages of evidence of how toxic fluoride is or how the studies were manipulated and all that kind of stuff, they won't believe it, because their spirit or their soul is unyielding.
Well, sure, and they're also conditioned to, and this is through the compulsory education system, which we've covered extensively with the Trivium, but they're conditioned to put their conclusions before their research or their why before the who, what, where, and when. So they're always left to come to false conclusions and to appeal to their emotions. And this is actually when you go through, you know, the creation of the compulsory education system, you can see that this was done intentionally to most people. They actually have to have their who, what, where, when, why, and how stripped out of them.
I agree. The education system in general is very destructive. That's why I recommend in my children's book homeschooling or alternative schooling of some kind that is more supportive of the individual's awareness and desires, and not a forced curriculum where the children have to sit down and be restrained in their desks.
Sure. Yeah, in fact, right now, my ex has my son caught into the state school system and all of this garbage, and this is what we're going through literally right now. He's actually told me several times that he hates his teacher, he's bored, he's not inspired there. And of course, with all of this Common Core garbage, they want all of the kids on a little treadmill and performing exactly the same at the same time, and he's just not interested. And of course, the next step that they'll probably do is want to put him on Ritalin or something. And my ex has gone along with everything they've forced on him. You know, we agreed not to vaccinate him. She's now had all of the vaccinations pumped into him. We agreed to homeschool. She has gone against all of that. And now she is actually trying to team up with the teacher and the principal to fight against me and keep me from homeschooling our son. So this is the kind of garbage that I have to deal with. And, you know, you hit the nail on the head there. So what is, and you mentioned it earlier, what is this Streptococcus mutans?
Well, just in response to your last comment, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, it's just these little spheres that are in our body, just like I can't remember how many hundreds of microorganisms there are in our mouth. And it just so happens that when our bodies are out of balance, there's certain prevalence of different bacterias. And some people say they're garbage collectors. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that they're working in harmony with our body, and they're helping in biological functions of the body. The research was done at Loma Linda University, and the book's called Dentinal Fluid Transport is the name of the book by Dr. Ralph Steinman, and I forget the other dentist who wrote it. And they talk about how the demineralization process is caused by the hypothalamus. So by the control center in our brain is basically analyzing our blood chemistry and sending messages to the parotid glands, which are in our jaw, and it tells our body and teeth to mineralize or demineralize. And that's one of the first and only places that I've seen dentists clearly state in their book, I don't have the quote in front of me, something to the effect that it's very clear that the microorganism theory is wrong, because this is what we can document and prove that it's true. And they also point out, and I put this in my book too, in Cure Tooth Decay, that dentists up until World War II, there was a big debate about what causes cavities. And most dentists, I actually have a book from the American Dental Association, most dentists did not believe that bacteria was the main cause of cavity. Most, not just a few, most of them. And they thought there was all kinds of other factors like diet and body chemistry and toxins and just vitamin levels and stress. And they thought everything else besides bacteria was the cause of cavities. And for political or other reasons, something changed, and there was a vote where some dentists decided that to throw out the idea of the body chemistry theory of tooth decay or the oral chelation theory of tooth decay and in favor of the bacterial theory. So it's never been proven conclusively, and evidence proves the other way. Bacterias are not the cause of cavities. They may be a part of the cavity process, but they're not the cause. And it's never been proven to be the cause. And when they try to prove it to be the cause, it doesn't work. And this is all the way from the 1800s till today. But today, it became a paradigm or belief system you're not supposed to question. Therefore, almost every dentist uses the idea of bacteria. Even the holistic ones that don't believe in them still say bacteria causes decay. Because it's been so entrenched. It's like the fluoride thing. It's such a belief system that we can't let go of, and that there's a lot of pressure not to let go of, because the last thing any big industry wants that's profiting over this, the pharmaceutical industry or the $100 billion dental industry, the unfortunate last thing that this industry wants is for people to be empowered with the very simple but important truth that it's not bacteria that cause cavities. It's what you eat that causes cavities. And when your teeth are weak, they will be susceptible to acids and maybe bacteria. But when your teeth are strong from a strong diet, you'll be immune to bacteria. And if people knew that, then the industry would have to change. It would fall apart, because then people wouldn't have a reason to submit to a dental procedure, because they would ask the dentist, why are you drilling my teeth? What's the point? What are you trying to do? This is my teeth aren't strong and you're going to drill it? How does that help my teeth get stronger?
Boy, well, you know, it's interesting that you brought up that this guy was from Loma Linda. Going back to my ex, her dentist in Peru was he had just resigned as the president of the Peruvian Endodontia Association, so he was the number one guy in the country, and he trained at Loma Linda, and so maybe this is where we got some of this good care from down there. But all right, so who was this guy, W.D. Miller, and he actually tested this germ theory of tooth decay, right?
Yeah, he wrote the famous book Microorganisms in the Mouth. He was the kind of the founder or innovator of modern dentistry. And he just said that bacteria are a part of the, are likely to be a part of the process of tooth decay. But
in the test tube, didn't he find that a lot of the teeth didn't decay? And why would he not try and figure out, hey, you know, there's a contradiction here, you know?
I would need to reread his book, but he has a whole chapter on chemistry and nutrition, if I recall correctly. He was in no means convinced that it's just bacteria.
Gotcha. All right, so you mentioned a bit ago the parotid gland, and it causes re and demineralization, or, you know, as if it acts in that. Could you go into that more?
Just a little bit. I mean, this is what the research at Loma Linda found by doing experiments on mice and so forth, is just the internal mechanisms of what is happening in our body when our teeth are decaying. And it's simply that the body is controlling the process. And the exact details, like all the little chemistry and stuff, of all the little steps that happens, it's complicated. But the simple thing that happens is, the simple thing that I didn't share, is that our teeth have fluid in them. So each tooth has approximately 3 miles of microscopic tubes. And these tubes are full of fluid. It's a fluid environment like the rest of our body, and the fluid is pulsating and circulating, and it goes from within the center of the tooth outward in sort of a cleansing motion. And when the glands get the message to demineralize, this fluid starts pulling the opposite direction and sucks into the tooth, and as a result, stuff that's in your mouth can start penetrating into the tooth and cause discomfort or what we call tooth decay.
What do you say about these whitening processes and chemicals?
Well, most of what I say is not really what I say. I'm passing along information that I...
Well, sure. Through. All right. So what do the experts say, or whoever we want to, who's ever appeal to authority we want to use here?
Well, it's important to just be clear that, because I'm open to feedback and also that maybe I'm interpreting things incorrectly. But one dentist book that I read, who wrote a book on tooth whitening, he says that most of the whitening in the long term doesn't work because it makes the teeth more discolored in the long run. So there's that aspect. There is a type of whitening that's less toxic. I mentioned it in my book, but since I don't do tooth whitening myself, the chemical kind, I don't know the name of it. And there's some that are more toxic. There's some that remove I don't know what the measurement is, but a small amount of tooth of enamel. And those, of course, are really bad and leaves your tooth feeling really sensitive. So in general, I would not recommend or encourage people to do tooth whitening. And you can slightly whiten your teeth naturally by rubbing baking soda on it, and it works by friction. And also, there's the chemical aspect. For me personally, I try to avoid using any types of harsh chemicals or substances. It's not what I want in my body.
Let me ask you this. What about people who, put coconut oil under the tongue?
Well, there's oil pulling, which is really popular. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Right, right.
In general, that's really beneficial to people, which is you would want to swish coconut oil works, organic coconut oil, organic olive oil, organic sesame oil. You swish it in your mouth like a mouthwash for 5 or 10 minutes, as long as you can.
Until you gag and run to the sink to almost vomit it out, right?
I don't know. Maybe some people say that.
You're declining to tell us, or
I don't know if that's the advice that is given out. I'm not declining anything.
Yeah,
I just don't.
Well, you know, it gets the oil gets filled with toxins from the body and everything, and And so, you know, I tried it once and I think I got to 13 minutes. I have a friend that got to 20 minutes. But when I hit 13 minutes, it was my body just wanted that stuff out, you know.
Absolutely. And I don't even push it that long. When I do it, I'll maybe do 5 minutes. And the oil is a good, is a good medium of kind of through some kind of form of diffusion. It does pull toxins out of our teeth and out of our gums. And it's very beneficial for most people. However, there's a few people that if they have a lot of mercury or I think just the mercury, it may aggravate something related to the mercury. So I've heard of a few cases.
It can actually cause it to become mobile again in the body if it's like settled in fat or something like that.
Something like that is going on. But if you don't have mercury fillings, overall people... most people really enjoy the oil pulling and feel like it improves their oral health by cleansing the tissues of the mouth. So, yeah, I think it's beneficial.
How many people have cavities, going back to cavities?
Let's see. So I have to look at the chart. It's in my book. But at one time in our life, that average person, 90% of the people on average, I'm just averaging it slightly, about 90% of the population has had cavities at one time. The average person over the age of 60 is missing 8 of their normal adult teeth. So as people age, they do lose their teeth on average. So it does get worse and more intense as we get older. There is a small percentage of people who don't get cavities. And the reason is it's not because they're immune to bacteria. It's because the demineralization in their body doesn't happen in their teeth. It happens in their jaw. So they'll get gum disease, or it'll happen in their back and they'll get back problems. It'll happen in their hips. They'll get hip joint problems. That's why some people are immune. And then there's a few people who have enough minerals. They're healthy.
Who was Weston A. Price, going back to him?
Weston Price, it was a dentist who practiced, let's say, from 1900 to 1940. And he was the chief researcher at the American or the National Dental Association, which is now called the American Dental Association. So he was high up in the Dental Association, and he was a dentist, and his son died from a root canal that he placed. And my guess is that he placed.
Oh, wow. That's horrible.
His son was like 16 or 17.
Wow.
And he got an infection and they couldn't take care of it. And his son died. And that I imagine that loss is why Weston Price set out to the extreme measure to prove his point. He was so meticulous and extreme in his research. He sent tens of thousands of food samples to be analyzed. He took over 10,000 photographs. This is when you had to like have your whole chemicals and set up and carry this huge stuff all around with you. It wasn't like today where it's quick and easy. And he traveled over the...
Huh? I was just going to say, clicking a few digital photos.
Yeah, today it would be much easier. You know, travel for months on boats to get to places and going to just really out there and to keep going, keep doing his research. And he traveled all over the world to places where primitive people, or primitive is probably not the correct word, indigenous peoples who had been living in the place for thousands of years. He traveled to places where they came in contact with modern civilization to try to document what is going on where the indigenous people don't have cavities, but the modern people do. What's going on? That's what he wanted to figure out. So he went there to all these points of contact to document what happened and why. And what happens is the indigenous people change their diet. It's not genetic. It's not bacteria. And the new diet the industrial diet, the diet based on foods of industry. And when I say foods of industry, that means foods manufactured to make a profit, not foods manufactured to create health. The foods of industries are devoid of minerals and vitamins. And when the industrial food replaces the traditional food, then the people get health problems, not just tooth decay, but they got tuberculosis, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, today is what we call cancer. So they got tuberculosis and they died from that. And it's from the food that they ate. And he saw places in the world like the Seychelles Islands. There were some South tropical islands like near Fiji, the Marquesan Islands. He said the Marquesan Islands used to be the Garden of Eden on planet Earth, like paradise. And the people, they didn't work. They just lounged around and enjoyed each other. And they were so healthy. And by the time he was there, almost the entire population of the Marquesans had been wiped out from changing from their traditional food to the modern food. The people went from happy in this divine world to longing to die from the pain of their infected teeth and their diseases.
Wow. So how did his work, how did Price's work influence your work and your book?
Well, I to stay true to the originator who's done, you know, decades of research, which I couldn't do, I couldn't afford, I couldn't make it happen. I tried to cleanly clarify Weston Price's work. So part of my book is just teaching people what was his message? Because he has an amazing book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. It's 500 pages. It's somewhere around 200,000 or more words. And it's so complicated that people miss the message. The average person doesn't have time to digest and assimilate it. And I had to read his book a couple of times and really think about it and focus on it to get a clear understanding. So I just cleaned up Weston Price's message. And then I added to it trial and error of many years in my own life and trial and error from other people. And I added more modern work and dentists who have followed in the footsteps of Weston Price, like Melvin Page, and I brought it all together. So the most foundational key that Weston Price taught was that we need fat-soluble vitamins to stop cavities. And the simple way to get a lot of those fat-soluble vitamins, and fat-soluble vitamins are vitamins that are in the fat tissues, And for healing cavities, it's only animal fat that stops the cavities.
Is that why vegetarians so often have such horrible teeth and bad smelling mouths? I mean, I came across that often when I was a vegetarian, and it really surprised me. You know,
it's definitely a significant issue. I don't know exactly why they would have. Well, bad breath and stinky teeth is a sign that there's decay and rotting in the mouth, although it could be in other parts of their body. And the simple theory goes that if we don't have fat-soluble vitamins, like fat-soluble vitamin D, only found in animal fats, not vitamin D from the sunshine or vitamin D from some other plant, but the fat-soluble vitamin D that we needed to metabolize minerals. So even if someone who's vegetarian and is eating a lot of minerals, if they don't have enough vitamin D in their diet, they're not going to metabolize their minerals well. So they're going to be not remineralizing. Now you can get a lot of, if you're careful and you're a vegetarian, you can get a lot of minerals or a lot of vitamins from butter and dairy products.
It's like Sally Fallon says, vegetables are a great mechanism for delivering fat, right?
Yeah, And vegetables taste really good cooked in oil.
Sure. Well, and you can't really, your body can't absorb the vitamins and minerals in the vegetables without the fat. Is that correct?
Something like that. We need to have
maybe
fat
not
in
all
our
of
diet.
Them. Right. Right.
We need to have fat. There's no question that when you eat abundantly and take care of your body, you have fat in your diet, and it's somewhere around a minimum of like 30% by calories of fat.
Sure.
Some people promote a higher fat diet, like 50%, 60%. So yeah, if you drenched your stuff and your vegetables in lard or butter, you'll have more fat. And some people that works great for, and some people their bodies are, they can't handle that much fat. But
yeah,
the point is that we need to have some fat, and what kind of fat and the amount, I let people decide, but you got to have fat. And also children love fat. It also depends where you are in your life, how much you're working out, how much you're exercising, the climate you live in. There's a lot of factors in how much fat you need to eat. But you need to not be afraid of it. And of course, the most important fat is grass-fed butter.
Sure.
Is going to really make a difference, and of course tastes very yummy.
Now, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with David Asprey's work, but I got turned on to his work a little over a year and a half ago, and I've had him on my show a couple of times, and he started recommending dropping 3 ounces of grass-fed butter in your coffee in the morning. And so I started doing that over a year and a half ago now, and it has been a huge benefit to the way I feel. And I don't think I've even gotten a cold one time in that whole period, but certainly a huge benefit. And we keep hearing from more and more people who have switched to that. Now, I don't know if I'm, you know, I do know that anywhere between 30 to 50, I seem to feel great. And anywhere below that, I seem to feel starved. My body immediately tells me that I need to go out and eat fat. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned children liking fat, because children love to steal butter when they're fat starved.
Even when they're not fat starved.
Well, they'll go out of their way to sneak into the fridge to steal butter if they are, though, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So let's see. All right, we covered wheat, we covered vitamins and minerals, we covered animal fats and saturated fats, and how is raw milk specifically so important to preventing tooth decay?
Well, raw milk is one of the most perfect foods we have, despite anyone who says to the contrary that we shouldn't be drinking milk.
I know, it's ridiculous. And for all you lactose intolerant people out there, if you stop drinking the pasteurized stuff, you won't be lactose intolerant anymore.
That's true for the majority of people.
Majority, right.
People who are really sensitive. I happen to be one of them. Milk has calcium, and our body has quite a need for calcium. Calcium helps neutralize toxins. It helps neutralize blood sugar fluctuations. We need calcium for our metabolic processes. And I don't know what the minimum is. The government, U.S. government recommended minimum. There is some rationale behind some of their recommendations. But there's a minimum, it's like 3/4 of a gram. It's sort of like the bare minimum you need to have normal function on
right.
average.
Well, bare minimum. But they also recommend grains as the foundation of the food pyramid, you know.
Well, I like eating grains, though.
They're yummy, even though they have all those problems we discussed earlier.
Yeah, and I'm still working on it, but there are ways to prepare grains that are much healthier and much less problematic. But everyone's different, so some people do need to avoid grains to be healthy. And a lot of people I've come across, they get stuck when they avoid grains too much because they end up depriving their body of calories. Because a lot of people need carbohydrates. Now,
sure,
but
what you do is you just, you know, you instead of using grains, you know, and obviously rice is a grain, but it's a little bit different. But, you substitute in white rice, and you can substitute in sweet potatoes, and then you keep the carbos up without so many of the damaging effects that we discussed earlier.
Sweet potatoes are amazing food. That's an amazing carbohydrate, nutrient-rich food. And yeah, white rice is an acceptable way to get carbs into your diet. It's not quite as dense as some other foods.
Right, and wheat, for instance, two slices of whole grain wheat bread is equivalent to eating a tablespoon of sugar, just gulping it down. So it just, it shocks the whole system, and it causes so much inflammation in the system from that. Yeah, you and I are probably going to have to agree to disagree on the wheat factor for now, but, I tried to look for that wheat substitute, and then when I was interviewing William Davis, he made it really poignant to me that less bad is not good. That when you factor in the LDL cholesterol and all the proteins we can't handle and all of the mycotoxins and all of these things, there's really no way we can really control the mycotoxins in the grains. And this is also such a huge issue for grain-fed beef, and why getting grass-fed beef is so important, and grass-fed butter, because all of those mycotoxins in those grains pass over to the cattle, and then they have to feed the cattle huge amounts of antibiotics on top of that because of all of these mycotoxins and things in there. So, it was a really tough battle for me, and I used to brew my own beer and everything. But, I've pretty much just entirely stepped away from the grain thing, except for rice. So you discussed the...
I do want to respond to that. Sure. I completely agree with everything you're saying. And there is a way to have grains and have it be healthy, but it's not how we're doing it today. And you definitely have to avoid that kind of wheat that you're talking about that's gone rancid. Most of the grains in the store... it has, I guess, these mycotoxins or whatever. It's spoiled.
Sure.
Because it's not stored properly. Sure. But there is a way to do it and be healthy. And there's
all the power to you, brother.
but there's even healthy beer. So when I get it all set up, you could try some and see.
All right.
Make some beer from corn.
All right. Well, and be careful. And Dave Asprey and I talked about the mycotoxin that's very often found in corn, too. And I forget the name of it off the top of my head. But, and even most of the coffee that you buy at the store is actually rancid. And when you actually start roasting your own beans or getting coffee that's verified mycotoxin-free, suddenly it energizes you. You don't get the jitters. You don't get nausea and all of this stuff, too. I mean, it was a real revelation to me a few months ago when I started roasting my own coffee beans and realized that all of the coffee I had ever had before was actually rancid.
That's crazy. I didn't even know that. But, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, you would definitely appreciate David Asprey's work. You two are on the same page there. He focuses on biohacking. You focus on teeth. But there's overlap in many areas. He's heavy into the paleo. He's the one that, like I said, he invented the whole idea of the bulletproof coffee, and he got that from hiking in the Himalayas up in some village somewhere way up there, and they made him yak butter tea that he said the yak butter tasted horrible. And then when he got, he was charged and had energy all day, and he couldn't believe it. And then when he got home, he's like, how can I do that and make it taste good? So he figured out the grass-fed butter and getting mycotoxin-free coffee, etc. And so, it really works. I can't even begin to tell you what dropping 3 to 4 ounces of butter and a little bit of MCT oil in your coffee in the morning does for you all day. So, all right, we covered vitamin D already. We covered wheat. Let's get into, let's get into entomophagy. You mentioned in your video about eating insects, and that actually surprised me because I'm one of the few people who has dared to venture. Interviewed Daniela Martin from Girl Eats Bug or whatever it is, And I have myself had waxworm tacos, and I know you mentioned eating bug tacos and things like that. And they're quite delicious. So let's talk about why are insects important in this conversation?
Well, let's see. Traditional cultures all over the world did eat insects. They're, of course, going to have all kinds of different minerals. Some insects are high in vitamin D, and I couldn't identify which ones those would be that we could find. And the vitamin D, of course, is what we're missing in our modern diet. The most important fat-soluble vitamin that we're missing that creates strong teeth comes from vitamin D. And the other sources of vitamin D are animal blood, fish liver, and I don't even know how much vitamin D is in all kinds of insects because nobody measured it. So it's just a good extra food group, but personally, yeah, I don't eat much of it. But I wanted to at least put it out there so that people know that to be open to it. And I think in the future, it's going to be more popular. And the insects have, they're powerful. They have strong energy. It's a part of our primitive diet. Humans definitely used to eat a lot of insects.
Well, you know, what I found interesting is that most of the entire world still eats insects, except for Western European, North American, and European cultures. And you know, some European cultures eat them. But, you know, if you venture to any of the Eastern or, you know, South American countries, et cetera, you know, grasshoppers and things like that are very common. You can go to very exquisite restaurants in Mexico that serve all sorts of insects. So, you know, the countries and cultures that eat insects are actually far higher than those that don't.
Yeah, it's a great affordable food source. You know, people struggle to afford good quality food.
And we're almost out of food on this world, and yet, you know, here there's insects everywhere, and they are abundant and reproduce faster than anything if you don't spray Raid on them.
Exactly, and of course, we're all depriving our children. If they don't, the child doesn't get to experience the insects, they're missing out on a sort of a important taste in their life. My children, when they have the opportunity, really like them, and we didn't make them eat it. It's just kids love to eat bugs.
You know, I don't remember if my son ate the waxworm tacos with us or not. I have some photos of myself eating. Maybe actually, I think he did eat them. But let's see. All right. So, what do you think about factory farm foods? Best quality and highest standards anywhere, right?
It's a horrible thing. It's really factory foods, and not just how the food affects us, but also that we would feel it's okay to mistreat the animals that are so important to us for our health.
And I can't overemphasize enough of going out and finding yourself a rancher. You know, we found ourselves a bison rancher recently. And we went by the ranch and got to see the animals and everything. And I mean, it's the quality of the meat is better than anything I've had since I was a child in the U.S. And similar to the quality that I had in South America and Europe when I lived there. You know, and everything was, of course, fresh in both South America and Europe. You know, you see the guys on the mopeds carrying the chickens and pigs and sheep into the meat market and stuff in the, you know, 5:30 in the morning and like in Peru and stuff. But all right, so cod liver oil, why is it important? And you know, are there certain brands that are better than others? How do you know when cod liver oil is bad or good or what?
Cod liver oil is by far the highest source of vitamin D. And of course, it has all kinds of other neat stuff that is found in the fish oils. There's only one brand that's good, and that's Green Pastures.
Now, why do you say that? Do you work for them? People are going to ask if you have some agenda for saying that.
No, I don't work for them. I'm not on any contract with them. It's better. I'll explain why it's better. Green Pastures, they used to sell, they called it high vitamin cod liver oil. So first of all, to track back a little bit, Weston Price would give the people who were dying or people who had cavities, he'd give them a mixture of very high quality concentrated butter with a very high quality of cod liver oil. And what has happened is because people have lost the value or demand for high quality nutrient dense foods, and instead have focused on taste and preservability and things like that, the cod liver oil that had, which is very high in vitamins A and D, very, very high compared to anything else we can get, the cod liver oil containing the naturally occurring vitamins A and D is no longer being produced by the cod liver oil factories. And instead, what they do is their filtration process destroys and removes the vitamins, and then they replace the vitamins with synthetic vitamins.
Oh
So it's
no.
almost like defeating the whole purpose of having
Sure.
the cod liver oil in the first place.
So the stuff that you would get at your local health food store in the capsules or whatever, the Norwegian stuff, that you wouldn't say any of that is good.
Well, it's not ideal. It's okay because it still has some good stuff in there, but
Right.
it's been more processed, and it only has small amounts of naturally occurring vitamin A and D.
Now, how can you tell if cod liver oil is bad?
What do you mean by bad?
It, like if it's spoiled or something, because some of these cod liver oils say they're good for like a year and a half or two, even in the capsules and stuff. So how,
I don't think it oil, at least oil with its natural proenzymes or whatever's in there, it doesn't spoil really.
Okay.
They have to, for legal reasons, put that 2 years on the bottle.
I got you. Okay.
Even
So.
Green Pastures, they put so Green Pastures makes cod liver oil that is minimally filtered. They do filter it some, and it's not heated. And it, as a result, it has all the naturally occurring vitamins and minerals and nutrients that we don't even know about. It's all in there. It hasn't been tampered with so much. And that's the intention of the owner is if it wasn't for Green Pastures, we wouldn't be able to get good quality vitamin D in our diet. So that's why I promote the product because it's amazing. And then when people take it and they don't have any more cavities, they're really happy. And also I feel stronger, feel younger, have better muscle growth if you're exercising, all those things. There's so many benefits to it, that most people like it. It doesn't taste good. It kind of has a bitter biting taste because it's fermented, but it doesn't go bad really. It does maybe get stronger if you had it for years and years. And the Eskimos used to eat ferment. They had fermented seal oil because if the seal oil wasn't consumed fresh, then it would start fermenting or aging. And it would also get that very sour, bitter, biting bite to it. And the Eskimos who have a high protein diet, they dip all their proteins in the seal oil.
So what foods should we eat?
Well, it's probably more what you should not eat, but foods
Well, okay,
generally.
what should, well, yeah, that would be easier to discuss. What foods should we not eat? And we can get into the corn syrup and all of that good stuff as well.
Well, I'll give people like a simple dietary to for the should eat. Every meal should have some kind of animal protein. It doesn't need to be a huge amount. Or it depends, it's whatever works for you, but you need to have some protein in every meal and even maybe every snack, like eggs, cheese, fish, chicken, beef, etc. And you want to have, of course, carbohydrate and fat from a nutrient dense, from a food that isn't tampered with. and that you believe is healthy. And you want to have some fat soluble vitamins. So an easy way to get that is to get the butter oil and collard oil from green pastures. Other ways to get that is to consume organ meats regularly, because our ancestors used to consume the bone marrow and the brain and the organs and the fat. And our bodies are wired and designed to have the good fats and the hormones from and the nutrients from the organ meats. So that's what we need to have regularly. What we don't need to have is, like you said, high fructose corn syrup. But one place that a lot of healthy food eaters, because I'm assuming a lot of your listeners already try to eat pretty healthy, healthy food eaters, some of them eat too many sweet foods. So even if it's natural, like a fruit or maple syrup or honey, we don't want to be getting all of our energy from this high intensity sweeteners. So you shouldn't have too much of those. And of course, I recommend avoiding anything processed, because foods that are processed or overly prepared have the higher potential to have food additives or to cause body chemistry imbalances.
What is Activator X?
Activator X, so in Weston Price, and we could also go on the foods to eat and not eat. Weston Price found that so he studied these groups that were isolated, and then he studied the groups as they came in contact with modern civilization. And he found that the isolated groups had a special value for certain kinds of foods that were related to bone growth and reproduction. And he called that substance in those special foods the X factor, the missing vitamin. And it's in primarily in grass-fed butter, but only when the cows eat rapidly growing, or primarily when the cows eat rapidly growing grass, such as in the spring and summer, depending on your location, and it makes the butter more yellow, or it's related to the butter being more yellow, because it's some kind of plant hormone that's converted by the animal's body. The Activator X can be in fish. It's particularly in fish eggs, because the fish eat the plankton and sea plants, and when the plants are growing quickly, they have the X factor. And it's also in some organ meats when the animals are eating the rapidly growing grass. And when you put it in your diet, you get really strong teeth and bones, really strong the periodontal ligament, the ligament that holds our teeth, those ligaments get strong. And it's really good for reproduction. So you have healthier children, feel better. That's the X factor.
Why, in your opinion, or what, in your opinion, is wrong with the vegetable oils?
I think there's so many things wrong with it that it's hard to pinpoint it, or there's a whole book about what's wrong with the vegetable oils. But the short answer is that our bodies are still the same bodies of thousands of years ago. It's the same genetics. We're like cavemen or primitive, more primitive humans. We still have the same body. And that's a body that was designed to only eat foods that could be processed by slow hand means, such as boiling or fire or fermenting or storage. We don't have the ability, our bodies don't have the chemical formulas to know how to process and digest foods that are made with technology that hasn't existed for thousands of years. And most the vegetable oils that are sold in the supermarkets, from soy and corn, those are the main ones, canola, didn't exist thousands of years ago. And you can't just press a corn and get corn oil. And you can't just squeeze a soybean or with some pressure and get soybean oil.
As you can with most seed oils, right? Or
as you could with
olives, exactly. Or coconut or palm kernel, et cetera.
Exactly. It's really easy and old-fashioned to extract oils from those sources versus the oils that we're eating now. You can't. And because of that, because of the processing that they do today, all the chemicals, the complicated technology, the high pressures, whatever they're doing makes the oil so the body doesn't know what to do with it. And as a result, it's toxic. And various oils have various levels of toxicity. And our body just shuts down and freezes with that stuff.
Sure, you know, and it makes tears in the arteries, and then when you're on a low-fat diet, your liver can't produce enough cholesterol to send out to repair this, and then these bad LDL cholesterols build up and lead to heart attack, etc. Combined with the high wheat, high grain diet, it makes for excellent, like Loma Linda being one of the number one or one of the top heart hospitals in the world. They certainly don't tell their patients to not eat wheat before surgery. Now, if you cook...
Well, you said something that is really important, so because I say it in my talks. The worst thing about the vegetable oils is that they displace the animal fats. That's the worst thing about it. So people aren't eating butter anymore. They're not eating lard. They're not eating the coconut oil as much. But people used to mostly just have beef fat and lamb fat and lard. That was their and butter.
Absolutely.
That was their fat.
And here's the thing, and this was my next question. Now, if you cook your bacon and you save the fat or you save your tallow and everything, you don't need to buy a vegetable oil, do you? You have a steady supply of it.
That's true, yeah. Now, we do use, in small amounts, we do use some sesame and olive oil.
I mean, sesame and olive oil and coconut oil would be the, and we have all three of those here, too. But those are the only ones that, and we use them far less than the saturated fats, because monounsaturated, they can still get oxidized, not as bad as polyunsaturated. But, anyway. So let's go back to corn syrup. You mentioned corn syrup and fructose earlier. What is so toxic about corn syrup? And, a lot of people will buy agave syrup. That's good, right?
No. Were you joking?
Yeah, there was a touch of sarcasm there. That's I was just leading you for that question.
Oh, okay. What's wrong with corn syrup? It's a human-made sugar that the body doesn't know what to do with it. It's metabolized in the liver. And according to one insider, it's like it just congeals in the body. It gets really hard. It's really dangerous. And agave and all the different studies of all the problems it causes, obesities. And
Now, why would agave be different than, say, like maple syrup?
So maple syrup is made by boiling and whatever else they do, but let's just say boiling the sap
right.
of a maple tree. And there are some agave cactuses that you could boil the sap from, and you would get a dark maple-like sugar from that, and that might be available in some small stores in Mexico. But the commercial agave product is made as a probably from a byproduct of the tequila industry that uses the agave plants as their carbohydrate source. And you can use and the way it started is some professors at some university in Mexico, they to support an industry and profit making, they were able to use the starches from the agave to create a sugar by using the enzyme hydrolysis process in a similar way that you would take corn and create corn syrup with it. Because again, if you boil corn, you don't get this sweet, syrupy, sticky sweetener.
Oh, what do you mean? Are you sure about that? I get, corn stew.
Corn stew.
Yeah, of course, I'm kidding.
Or corn soup.
Yeah, when I've cooked corn, it's never turned into a syrupy sugar ever.
Exactly. And the only reason why high fructose corn syrup is on the market is because of the government subsidies that make it cheaper than sugar. There's no evidence that it's better, safer, or healthier, and there's thousands of studies about all the health benefits. I think the diabetes, the obesity, heart problems, possibly sure. the hardening of the arteries and so forth, are all very connected to the increase of high fructose corn syrup.
I would say it would be related to our last three topics there. The corn syrup, the vegetable oils, and the wheat combined would be, all contribute to that, wouldn't they, the most?
Absolutely. There's many things that cause all these health problems. There's many factors.
All right. So what other sugars and sweeteners are bad?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Almost, if you don't know what it is, it's bad.
Let's go at a different way. Which ones are good? And you say don't even use refined or powdered stevia, only use the whole herb stevia, right?
Yeah, I just have problems trusting these businesses. It's like, what exactly are you getting? Are you sure that it's what you want? I'm looking for my list of sweeteners.
Okay.
So the sweeteners that are safe to eat would be, and safe, you know, there's relative amounts of safety.
Right.
But the most safe sweeteners, the most natural, are minimally refined cane sugar. So, and those, there's brands like Rapidura and Heavenly Sugar that have that less refined cane sugar.
If you can get that good stuff from Peru, shipped right up from the coast at Moyendo, that is the best.
And that's another unrefined cane sugar?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they juice the canes, or they press the juice out of the canes, they let it dehydrate in the sun, and they bag up the crystals.
Yeah, exactly. That sugar in moderation is okay. Maple syrup, organic maple syrup, and raw honey, raw unheated honey from bees that are not fed sugar additives. Because a lot of honey, in order to have more production, they feed the bees some kind of synthetic sugar, and then they call it honey. So the bees, it takes them a while to make honey from the flowers. So those are safe sweeteners, and then you could also make your own. You could use dates. You could use homemade apple juice or orange juice. There's a lot of different ways to get sweet flavor, and almost everything that are not on that list aren't good. So we talked about agave nectar.
Well, aspartame is good, right?
No.
More sarcasm there.
If the government says it's good, it's probably...
Well, I mean, it's FDA approved.
If it's FDA approved, if it had to be approved, it's probably not good.
Right, because it had to go through so many studies to see how toxic it was before they approved it.
Right, and then they got some little loophole inside guy to approve it when nobody was looking. Because they didn't even want to approve that kind of stuff.
All right, Rami. What is the single most important concept or idea that you would like people to take away from this interview with you?
Tooth decay is caused by our diet. It's not caused by bacteria. It's caused by the foods that we're eating. It's not that there's some unjust fate that has become upon us, but that we have unknowingly, by mistake, lived in a way that's been out of balance, and that out of balance way is to eat foods that are not right for our body, that are too processed, that are of too many chemicals or potentially toxic, and to have forgotten and become disconnected from a more humble, old-fashioned in a way of eating. And if you are able to reconnect with a more wholesome way of living and eating, and you'll be healthier. And if you follow some of the specific steps that we talked about today, and it's all spelled out in my book, Cure Tooth Decay.
Eat bugs, people.
Right. Okay. That's your summary of the message.
I'm kidding.
Well, I make the joke. It's not, I mean, you're serious. It's not a joke, though.
Well, yeah.
If people ate more insects,
we'd be much better off. You're right.
If we studied this, we'd probably find that all kinds of insects have all kinds of health benefits. And if people started adding them to their diet, they'd have less this problem and less that problem.
You know what, Rami? I'll send you my interview with Daniela Martin on entomophagy. I think you'll get a kick out of that interview because we did a whole hour and a half on just this topic, so it's good stuff. And I'll even share with you my waxworm taco photos, me chowing down on some worms.
Well, put it on your website with this and tell people this is how they cure cavities.
Okay, I'll do that. I will do that. And Rami, your book, your website, any contact information you might want people to have, that sort of thing?
CureToothDecay.com. I can't have people contact me because there's too many. I would just be talking to people all day and night and not have any existence. On my website, there's a link to a community where you can post questions. There's also a Cure Tooth Decay group on Facebook where you can ask questions, and there's some knowledgeable people to help answer, and occasionally I'm on there. I also have a free email newsletter you can subscribe to, and I put interviews like this on the email newsletter so you can get some free information and stay in touch and get informed.
You know what? There's one last question I wanted to ask you. What have dentists said about your work? You know, not just the ones that are obviously on this side, but the others.
Well, there's been different opinions. Rarely to never has anyone said I'm wrong, or that they even to me. Many dentists don't believe that a cavity can be healed, and that's the belief system that most people have been taught growing up. I'm friends with some dentists. I talk to them. I had a dentist who's in charge of a large dental insurance program contact me and say, "Thank you. How can I help you? Thank you for teaching people that it's a good nutrition is how you prevent cavities." So a lot of dentists know that, but they struggle to integrate that into their practice. So some dentists, dispute it, but it's because that's their business, and so it doesn't work together well. Some dentists sell my book at their office. Some dentists read my book and make people, like your dentist in Peru, they say, "You need to have butter. You need to have," they just tell their client, everyone, whether they want to or not, they tell everyone that their food problem or their teeth problem is because of their diet. So there's been all kinds of different feedback, and I hope to help innovate positive change in the dental industry, because overall the industry is kind of not very modern and efficient and helping people. It's not helping people enough.
All right, Rami, thank you so much. And did you have anything else you would like to add?
No, thank you for the interview. And just keep spreading good information. And for everyone, you got to just listen to yourself, pay attention to what your body's saying, trust your instincts. Don't ever get caught up too much in any paradigm. Just listen to what you're really feeling, and that will help guide you to what you need.
Indeed. All right, Rami, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.